Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, Pop Life Podcast. Today is it the 10th? April 10th?
11th.
11th. April 11th. Yeah. 2022.
My birthday week.
Yeah, that's right. You're joining us Thursday, right? The
Boogie Yoki is
Thursday. Yes, Thursday yes. Eve.
Me and Brad. So we're so sorry you cannot be here.
Yes, definitely sorry.
I know, I'm so sorry.
You and Trav. And is Brad judging too? We're both judges, correct?
It's okay. You and Jeffrey and Kelly.
And, oh, Kelly's judging us. Yeah. Okay.
And Corinda, who's judged with y'all before as well. So,
okay.
It's only a few. There's only like 6 or 7 people that's ever rotated in and out of judge positions. I don't just hand those out at random, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I like judging because, you know, I don't have to perform.
I
get to be flagrant.
Making up. Your ass was bad. Last year, I mean, in 19.
What was the one that got, remember, brother, got missed? It was a massive ad lib. I forget what song
Sugar.
That was.
He missed Sugar.
It was Sugar. It was Sugar. At the end of Saturday O'Neil. Love.
On Saturday Love. And we
you can't collectively,
we collectively took points away.
Yeah.
That was universal. We did not.
I agree with that as well.
Yes. We did not have a conversation regarding that. That was universally in real time.
What are you doing? That's part of the song, my nigga. Like, what are you doing?
No, it's a very
Doing Earth, Wind, and Fire joint, and Maurice does that, you know, that and you don't say that, nigga. What are you doing?
That's a very big part. but Jeffrey, you would be like, I'm gonna give him a 9.87.
Yeah,
when we're on a 0.5 scale, I was like, what?
Shaving.
Somebody gave, and I think you gave somebody like 100 points, which made Josen give 101 points. Like, I was looking at the scores.
Yeah. Me and Josen, I remember me and Josen had a little indiscretion about Josen. Yeah, but that'll be fun. Looking forward to doing that and, you know, getting out and seeing some people. Let me just sidebar real quick. It doesn't, I went out Saturday night. A friend of mine was in town who works for Meta. And he's from DC, lives in LA, and he had never been to Harlem. So I went out Saturday.
He had never been to Harlem?
No, because he's never really he didn't come to New York.
He's a person of melanin? Okay.
Yeah. He's an Indian cat. So but when he came to New York, he would stay downtown. They would never come uptown. So I took him to Bar Wine. It just happened that Bar Wine was like super lit. Mad people came through, like, you know, Tammy Ford and Carla Bone and Nova was there. It was a thing. I don't know what.
I don't think Tammy's ever gone inside at all. I think Tammy's just
mad people was just out. You know, like, so he got the full Harlem experience. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
But anyway, let's move forward.
We see also you got a fresh dye.
Yeah, actually,
Golden Lord.
Yeah, I got did like this. Here you go, Inga, with the bullshit. I did it like 2 weeks ago. But you know what's weird now? Like I go to my man. I don't even know his name, but it's my man. He got a nice shop. They have their business, but it's like because they Dominicans, the English isn't. But when he did it, it was kind of like purpley. It was weird, and then it just kind of turned this over time. I don't know.
Oh, it just did that by itself.
It just kind of. I told him I wanted blonde. Is that what it is? Is it toner?
Well, they gotta wash it with the purple shampoo after they do the blonde
eyes.
But does it get all the orange or green? And then you over time wash out the purple to get back down to your yellow.
See, I was just like, so you put me up with some game, Inca. I even know because again. My man speaks he speaks decent English.
Y'all gotta everybody use Google else, Translate or something.
Everybody
you
else
be walking
there?
Out the place with a different color, Jeff.
No, like, but they popping like it's always crowded. Like they do great work. It's a big shop. It's well taken care of. But like he pretty good with English. Anybody else? Nah, bro. Just a lot of how you doing. I gotta pull a little kid there to tell him to tell. That's a lot of that. Oh, anyway, yes, I'm blind. I'm back to blind. Back to blind.
Great.
But bro,
before we get started, I have to file a gripe and complaint. Something about this spring. People who, in my mind, are children are suddenly adults or close to it, and I'm very offended. I saw a picture of Marsai Martin from.
I saw that picture yesterday. I was like,
Blackish.
I felt weird. Like,
the fuck is? I mean, she's 17, but god damn, like she looked like 22 in that picture. Like,
I feel weird looking at her because I was
There was a body situation. It was a body split.
It was a thigh out. I was like, I'm not comfortable with this.
I was feeling away.
You're little Diane. And now you're not little Diane. I don't want to look at you.
Victoria and David Beckham's son got married over the weekend. I was like, he's 13. How is he getting married?
Like, Solange's son's allegedly going to have a child.
What? Daniel.
Yeah.
Christ.
Yeah, he's going to have a child. He's
Solange's like grandma?
Yes, I said Solange about to be a grandmother.
That's a lot.
And Miss Tina about to be a great grandma.
That's so much. I guess I guess Daniel is 20 something, right?
Yeah, I think he's about 20 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's like 17 or 18.
Oh, isn't that young?
Okay. I thought he was born in like 2000. Okay.
Little teen.
So I don't mean this to sound bad. I'm just saying it. He's repeating the cycle. Okay.
Okay, let's move on. Before we get in trouble. Bro, you want to mention the little plane incident you had, the plane fiasco?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be very brief because I could go on with this shit forever. But basically, as we were boarding our flight on Friday at like 8 o'clock in the morning, so granted, we've been up now since like 5:30 in the morning.
Niggas is cranky.
Left the crib, got to the airport, checked in, baggage is checked. Boarding pass is scanned. I'm literally putting my shit in the overhead bin, and
you was actually on the plane,
bro. I was on. I'm literally pulling my iPad out my backpack, getting ready to sit down and get comfortable. That's how on the plane I was.
Okay,
and they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna cancel this flight." I was like, "The fuck are y'all like?" And it was just a bit of chaos at the airport right there. I do want to say peace to the captain. Because he definitely was the kind of guy that you fucking want in charge. Okay. Like, he was getting answers and he was giving direction. He was not fucking sitting there twiddling his thumb, because apparently they blindsided them as well. Like, they had no clue that they were about to be canceled.
Yeah, they was about to fucking shift gears.
Exactly. Like, literally on the plane. So he definitely screamed at somebody. I don't know who it was, but I heard it. Right there. He said, that doesn't make sense to me, and I'm not doing that. And hung up the phone. So whoever told him, whatever they told him, that mission did not get accomplished.
He wouldn't hand that shit.
So the long and the short of it is, we ended up actually buying our tickets with another airline, and that was 5 o'clock. So basically, we're in the airport from 8 a.m., a fucking work shift, from 8 a.m., to like fucking 5 p.m. And luckily we did that because all of the people that were on that flight, which was full, it was canceled and the other flights were full. So we were trying to go anywhere. We were like, yo, I even considered Philly.
I was about to say you could do Philly and then take the train home.
I would just rent a car and drive home.
You could do New Jersey Transit up or whatever.
Hour, 20 minutes. But I have my mother-in-law with me. So again,
you can't move.
You know what I'm saying? It's just not that simple. But long and the short of it is, we actually flew home on America. Came into LaGuardia, which was, I had not been to LaGuardia since the upgrades. Peace to them. Because that was not the same airport, my nigga. No.
They've done a lot of work.
That's a completely different airport than what I was used to. I would actually consider going through LaGuardia to leave if I'm going domestic. I mean, that's all you can do there. By and large, we were there. I just want to reiterate, Atlanta's a shitty airport. I know it is big and you have a lot of connections and all of those sorts of cool things, like a tram and all of that shit, and it sounds really cool, and it like maybe looks really cool, but like when you have an international airport of that size, like, niggas want to eat more than Chick-fil-A and Five Guys, okay?
And Bojangles.
Like, get it the fuck together, okay?
I will say, there's a little food court. I want to say it's in...
That's Gate E. You talking about Gate E.
It's in T Gates, I think. But okay. There's one spot that they got the best rice and gravy I've had in a really long time. And I can't remember the name. I just went there one day to get some fried. I think when I flew home in 2020, I stopped there to get some food. And I got some fried chicken and some greens and some rice and gravy. And that rice and gravy was hitting. But there's not like a restaurant. I mean, aside from the normal.
Yeah, they got like the TGI Fridays and all that type of shit.
Yeah, that you can like go in and sit down.
And the bar is the food.
I feel like airports on the whole, like as airports have tried to get more whatever, the food options have gotten worse.
What I find is like this, the three airports what I would expect to have great options are the New York area ones, LAX, and Atlanta. And those three, as far as food and shit, to me are the worst. Like if you go to Charlotte, it's dope. You go to Detroit, Dallas is incredible with the food. Houston,
Philly is good that with shit, the food.
Yeah, Houston is like great, but again, these massive airports with all these commuters going all over the world, the food options are just like bro said, it's just fast food. It's like Bojangles, Shake Shack, you know, TGI Fridays, Chick-fil-A. It's a bunch of that shit.
Hey,
you got
Buffalo Wild Wings.
Listen, I completely understand that there's a need for that. Like, not everyone is going to be able to just, like, sort of sit down and eat, you know, $150 meal in an airport in a day, right? Like, so I totally understand that there would not be a lot of them, but to have none of them
is wild
to me. Like, even Newark has a legit sit-down restaurant, because that's really kind of what we were looking for. It's like, I'm fucking feeding my fucking damn near 90-year-old mother-in-law shit out of a container. Like, what I mean? Like, I'm at Halal Brothers or some shit. Like, what are we doing here?
You're not a styrofoam and shit.
Yeah, so you're not a styrofoam and you know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. We want to sit down. But anywho, Atlanta, I know we always have these conversations about New York and the South and all of that sort of shit. And Atlanta's taking a lot of pride. They have a lot of shit going on. And it's a really dope city. And they got a lot of shit. Your airport's fucking horrible. It's pissed my ass with the way y'all talk about New York.
Get it together. Airport.
Eat a dick. Eat a dick.
So while we're on food, and I don't know if y'all saw this little, this is actually the second kind of story about this restaurant I'm talking about. It's a restaurant in Dallas and Houston. It's only in Texas. I think it's Dallas and Houston.
I already know what you're talking about. That
Turkey
damn
Leg Hut.
Turkey Leg Hut.
So Turkey Leg Hut is an extremely popular restaurant in Dallas and Houston. I think the original is in Houston, not whatever, but they're both very popular. They serve these massive turkey legs. You could basically like turn a turkey leg on its, you know, straight up, tap the bone and the meat falls down. They cover it with whatever you want, right? But I know maybe 2 years ago or so,
I think it was 19 or 20?
It might have been 19. It might have been 19 because 20 was pandemic. So 19.
Right, but I also feel like nobody was paying attention to
the pandemic. Around then. They instituted this massive dress code, like no shorts, no athletic duds, basically it was almost no blacks, which is interesting because, you know, it's black owned. It's a black owned restaurant.
Apparently the dress code was because the rumor is the dress code was instituted by the owner's wife because the owner kept fucking patrons.
Oh. Okay, I didn't know that part. Okay, that's right. That sounds like some Dallas Houston shit.
Hold on.
Like on site in the bathroom.
Rewind that part. You said the owner was what now?
Was sleeping with patrons and would be like getting busy in the bathroom with people at the restaurant. So she thought by somehow making an anti-hoochie mama dress code, it would slow them down. Right.
I was actually
surprised to see that they're having another issue because
if you look online, they pop it. They get money packed. like packed, like lined down the fucking strip. They getting money. This is a very popular place. So this next thing, which just popped up, is now they've instituted a hunt. You have to make reservations if you're going to go sit, and you have to put, it's $100
via Cash App
to make reservations.
Which, to make first reservations. Of all, is ghetto as fuck. So here's the thing. Somebody told me that the spot, like a lot of the seating is outside. It's basically like it's not a sit down.
It's not fancy.
And they're trying to institute, because part of the thing with the, even when they did the dress code before, was a whole thing about having parties of certain sizes and all of this other shit. And it's like they're trying to institute sit down restaurant shit when they're holding the wall.
Because it ain't fancy.
The hut, like your name has hut. If your name has hut in it, I don't really think you can be, you know, making all these demands.
Like it's metal chairs and shit like that. But
charging me $100 and your highest menu item is like $23.50.
That's what I'm wondering. So $100 worth of shit, or that means I got to get some takeout to go? Do you get the refund? I didn't get the details.
You don't get a refund.
That's right.
You don't get a refund. You're working backward from your $100. So basically, it's zero. It's $100 minimum in order to sit down.
That's crazy, bro.
I want a fucking turkey leg.
A turkey leg with some macaroni and cheese all slapped on top of it.
I mean, here's the thing for me. Like, they get to make all of the ridiculous rules they want because I simply don't have to go there. Right? You could tell me, we only see niggas in orange six-button suit. And God bless, because I'm never wearing that. Yeah. So that means that's not an option for me, right?
Yeah.
That's how I see this. It's a private business. They get to dictate that. Clearly, there is a section of the population that enjoys this dress code and these sorts of rules and regulations.
And
we understand why, right? Because there is, I think it's okay for us to admit that there's an extreme in brunch culture. Okay, like not everything is fucking tea at the Four Seasons, but not everything is fucking Wet Willie's on South Beach. Sometimes, you know, niggas want to leave 10 a.m. service and get a turkey leg, and they don't want to see ass and titties out all day.
Yeah. Or pay $100.
Pay $100, right? Like whatever your thing is, they found their niche.
They found
a niche. They're going to keep doing that because it works for them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very, I take this as a lesson in business, which is really speaking to your customers.
Yes.
They are at the point now where they cannot keep people away.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck they're doing it right.
It's working. For them. It's working.
For them.
It's working.
Now,
yeah.
Myself personally, nigga, I'm good. First of all, I'm not a turkey leg person. And second of all, I'm never paying $100 to eat turkey legs. But God bless.
With some greens on top.
and some fucking Tito's, some fucking Tito's drinks. Nigga,
you know they probably got the Hennessy turkey leg too. Like we dipped it in Hennessy.
For $100, you could go to Six Flags, ride all the rides, and walk around in your bathing suit and shorts with a turkey leg. Man? So why would I go sit in your restaurant in a tuxedo?
I just don't understand. And, you know, I'm from the South, so I don't understand the concept of paying that much money for a plate. Like, it's not a meal, it's a plate, right?
Well, and these are different things. I mean, it's a big plate.
In fairness, the goal, okay, so the way I read this, the goal for them was to establish almost like a guarantee for reservations.
Yes.
A person is usually not by themselves. So the $100 is for your table. It is not per person. So obviously, if four people are going out to eat, I mean, you're at $50 after you've sat down and gotten a drink and an appetizer.
But it's
right?
The Cash App. It's the Cash App part for me, right? Yes. Like register with Open
Table. We don't need the government in our shit.
Yeah, like normal reputable establishments and get people to put a fucking credit card down for the reservation. Like,
so I ain't gonna say no names, but I went to a party one time.
Okay.
And my man was like, the credit card machine is broke.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, nigga. We know what that is. That translates to, this is off the books for this evening.
Yes.
And that's a dangerous game because, I mean, you're probably going to mix and mingle.
yes.
Your money, right? Like, and at the end of the day, if you fuck around and get audited for whatever reason, if you
haven't jammed.
If you haven't paid your taxes properly, and by taxes, a lot of times businesses skip out on their local taxes, which is why sometimes you'll often go by a restaurant and you'll see that pink sign up in the fucking window. Yeah. It means that they have not reported their sales tax to their local authorities. So a lot of times they'll basically be shut down until they pay that. And it's often not a considerable amount of money. It's a relative amount of money. But these are some of the things you do and things that happen when you deal in those sort of cash businesses. And also, I just think for me, I don't really want to send my Cash App like
out like that. Yeah,
I don't fucking know what the hack is. I don't know what the hack is. Guess what? When I go to register on table, open table, I need to put down a card, and some shit happens with my Amex, guess who I call? I call Amex, I hang up the phone, and I don't worry about that shit.
Yeah. Right. I know a friend to the show, Kia, she was down there with her daughter last year. She went to a Turkey Hut. She said the food was banging. She said the shit was crazy. She said it was incredible.
Clearly. It would happen.
Yeah, so you know, but you know, so good luck with the Turkey Hut and them Texas ass niggas, bruh. I wanted to mention: did you see your show got canceled?
What?
600 pounds.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
It got canceled. They fired the doctor.
What?
I can't say I'm surprised. I'm actually surprised it took this goddamn long because Dr. Now don't be giving.
Yeah, Dr. Now. Yeah, they fired him. They fired him. Yeah, and then they canceled the show.
There's so many memes of him just saying, like, you are too fat.
Flagrant shit.
I have a series of coffee mugs with his sayings and him on there.
Really?
I believe
he's a fan.
Yo, I fucks with Dr. Yo, dude.
I fuck with Dr. Now, too, actually, because he don't be putting up with these people's bullshit.
First of all, I fuck with Dr. Now. But there two things happening. One, I think the show might have been... First of all, that's a very expensive show to make.
Is it?
And the reason I say... Fam, they're following...
They follow every person for so long, yeah.
Oh, they follow... I didn't realize that.
Those people for a year. Now, they may not be with them every single day of that year, but they're definitely following them over the course of the year, and they're moving around, right? So it's not like, you know, if you're in fucking, you know, buttfuck Tennessee, right? There are no locals to work your cameras. Like, you have to fly in. You have to pay people their rates and all that sort of stuff. So I imagine.
And they travel with them.
The travel,
for their first consults and sometimes for like the surgery. So it's a really long lead.
The process.
A lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot. I mean, I think Dr. Now has probably worn on people. The other part of 600 Pound Life is that, you know, the stories are very similar. they're not very different. I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but if you watch one, you watch them all. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you know, I used to act up and my daddy drank and then to keep me quiet, they give me cake. And that's why I'm 800 pounds. I mean, it's literally, you can interchange that shit, right? By and large. So, yeah, I mean, I totally understand that. And I mean,
and it just seems like people like to watch because I've only seen it a couple of times. I never locked in. But just to see some of the outrageous ways that the people keep the people around them feeding them.
You know,
that's what it is. It's like watching the kids. They're watching a 9-year-old making like a fucking lasagna and then giving the whole pan to the mom. And like, you know what I'm saying?
There's like a heavy, it's like I used to watch it. I would say for like 2 or 3 seasons, I watched it regularly. But I don't even think I realized. I mean, I knew it was still long, but I haven't watched it in so long because the show can also take a toll on you because these people are manipulative. You either have the people who need to lose the weight are very manipulative, or there are people who are around them who are sabotaging them, right? And both of those can be really hard to watch long term, especially for the ones because there are some that they follow over multiple episodes or who come back or who relapse or, you know, whatever have you. So I had to take a break and I was curious because, you know, I think what turned it, and you can tell me what you think, Sean, if I'm not mistaken, last season somebody died for the first time. I can't remember if they died on the table. Did they die on the table?
They've had a couple of deaths, and the death usually, I know one man, he actually fell during the taping, and the complications from his fall, had you know sped up his transition in dying. I know that there was one woman, particularly that I watched, who was incredibly manipulative and. You know, before, you know, at the end of the taping, they expressed that, you know, she had passed away. Some of them have really, really, first of all, they have every imaginable pre-existing condition, every imaginable heart, diabetes, all of those things that you would expect from a person that size to have. Really, what you're watching for is the medical thing to me really takes a back seat to the interpersonal dynamics on the show and kind of watching how that operates. And it is the most fascinating thing to watch them when they're actually being honest about not, like, they really lie about what they're taking in. Like, it is...
Oh, like, about how much food they're taking.
It is wild to witness.
Yeah, they'd be like, I haven't even eaten that much. I just had some chicken and a piece of broccoli, and I'll be like, you gained 120 pounds since last year. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Now,
they failed to
cut the shit.
They failed to mention that the chicken was a whole chicken. It was
right. That was fried.
It was deep fried.
And the broccoli was actually smothered in cheese.
And like,
right. That far, yeah. And then they drank a 2-liter Coke with it.
Yeah.
One dude was like, yeah, I haven't really been eating. I just been taking these protein shakes. And Dr. Now was like, what are you talking about? These, that's just not in your diet. Damn, right. You're drinking sugary, you know, like high caloric
protein. Like milkshake shakes. Protein
like
shakes. Milk, yeah.
Like basically he's drinking fucking multiple milkshakes a day.
Yo, so one more food thing, and I'm going to let Inka lead this one because she was irate with Paula Patton's fried chicken. Miss Paula Patton. So go ahead, Inka. Go ahead. I'm gonna let you lead this story because you still mad. You still mad. Inka's still mad.
Super sweet Paula Patton, God bless her. Decided to share her mother's fried chicken recipe on the internet because she had to fry over 100 pieces to take to her son's school. This was like last month. It happened a long time ago. But a TikToker, of course, uncovered the video and showed it to all of us, which is why I'm really upset. But this woman took naked-ass pink chicken wings, rinsed them off, threw them in a bag of white flour.
No seasoning.
No seasoning has entered the mix at this point. Not a single grain of salt. Then heated up some avocado oil on the stove, put that floured pink chicken into this grease, and then seasoned the chicken while it was in the grease.
Seasoned the grease, basically.
With Lawry's black pepper and a little paprika for color, she said. Every single piece got a little, allegedly, bit of the seasoning. She turned it over. She did it again. She takes the chicken out. The grease is black at this point. Completely black. She fried like 17 pieces of chicken. Grease is black.
But she opens up. Black.
Opens
she
up.
Going to jail.
Drumettes. It's pink inside.
Oh my God.
And she salmonella. Eats it on camera.
The salmonella.
She loves it. It's everything.
And since it's to her baby's class, she's going to jail.
130 pieces of chicken.
And that's all I got to say.
Yeah,
mama
white. So she, yeah, she got. She.
The
she,
grease.
I was just like.
The grease looks like tar. Mud. You look like mud.
because avocado oil, you think, has a high fry point. That's the problem.
Well, I was gonna ask
the
you.
High, it does.
The fry point
fry
is
in avocado oil instead of the regular
the fry
Pisco
point. Avocado oil is close to like 500. It's up there. Okay, it's up there with grape seed. It's up there with coconut.
It is up there with grape seed. Because I was like, why is your oil? So here's the thing, right? We all know Paula has her shit with her. However, you have been black adjacent at minimum, you know, because I don't know. I don't know what her day to day.
She was married to Robin Thicke for a long time. Might not.
But Robin Thicke is a white man. He's a white man. That's why I said adjacent.
Aiming because, black people around him, maybe. You know, I don't know.
I mean, but Robin Thicke is a white man who is also black adjacent, and yeah. She's a biracial woman who I don't know how many niggas is in her life. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. Robin Thicke is a white man who is soul adjacent. That nigga's yes. whole life is white. Except the music.
It is. But Alan was soul adjacent too. So I'm gonna get some extra credit because his daddy, okay. his daddy could have come through to cook out. So
may he rest in peace. Yes.
May he rest in peace. so like I don't know how many niggas is around them, you know what I'm saying? Who really like get down with the get down. And so I'm very perplexed because even the adjacentness, even just the vicariousness from being on movie sets with black ass people should have taught you how to better make chicken. And I just don't know who told
you. I can guarantee that Paula Patton has never fried a single piece of chicken for a black person.
Before that moment.
No.
I would never even fry chicken on camera because I don't fry chicken enough to trust that it's not consistent. Like, it's not always same. The right brown. It's not always like fried chicken is same. Not easy.
It's not
unless
it's
you
all.
Off doing
it's
that
a,
shit every fucking Sunday.
It's a skill, and
it is a skill.
She had a nice kitchen. I give it that.
Which is
the kitchen
why
kitchen itself was nice.
Right.
Listen, the girl has
nice
money.
Like, breakdown. Beautiful down.
Said, I don't know about the chicken, but the walls were
the walls. The island was beautiful. The island was beautiful.
That's so it does not count.
But I just, as an aside, fried chicken being such an art is why when Country Cousin Lauren and I went to the Sean and Monica's vow renewal and we were on Natchez Steamboat and somebody's grandma had fried some chicken that was clearly shaken in a paper bag. Deb and talked so much trash about us because we was talking about that chicken. She was like, y'all bitches is greedy. I've never heard people talk about fried chicken like this because we were like, that chicken is amazing. Who fried that chicken? Is that boy?
Who made that chicken?
Listen,
I need some New Orleans. Chicken. Where is that chicken?
New Orleans is a safe place to order fried chicken from and every restaurant you go to.
Oh, New Orleans,
is safe.
Yeah. New Orleans, Houston too. Yeah.
LA,
they're going to burn you. They're going to burn it.
No,
right.
I would never order that in LA. I would
ever.
Well, let me say, that depends. It depends on the safety of the location of the restaurant. If I have to leave my watch and take just enough cash so a nigga don't shoot me if he robbed me.
Chicken finna be.
You know that chicken gonna be right.
Yeah, I'm
probably about to be crazy.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the chance on the chicken.
Yeah. If the restaurant also has vegan options on the menu, the chicken is
not trash.
If there's a woman in the back with a mole and a hair on it, we have good money.
It's lit. It's lit.
Great. If the restaurant's vegetable plate includes macaroni and cheese and
potato
rice.
Salad.
And rice.
It's lit.
Yes. Yes.
You know? So peace to you, Paula, man. God bless you.
But I will say she had the absolute best, most positive, full of light response
sweet.
To everybody dragging her chicken recipe. Yeah. She was like, look, my mama made it this way. I'm going to keep making it this way. I love y'all for even watching the video. None of y'all are invited. It's fine.
Yeah. No, she had a great attitude about those. She wasn't mean or bitter or pissed off. She had fun with it. It actually upped her.
But I
up
think, but also, I also think that the interesting thing is that we were making fun of her, but not like in a, it was not to extreme, right? Like we were.
It
making,
wasn't mean.
Right. It was definitely bless her heart.
It was very much a black thing. It was very much a like, okay, you are wilding right now, and it wasn't venomous. I think,
and I think
you could sense that from the interactions, which is why I think there was one a response, and two, why it was such like, come on, guys,
you all right, y'all got me, whatever.
Everybody ate the chicken. We're all fine.
Exactly, we all good. Nobody got sick.
It was pink inside though.
Yeah, we know.
What's the call? Got canceled too. I don't know if y'all saw the reel. They got canceled after.
Yeah, I saw that.
And the View. Thank God.
Oh, The View got canceled?
The View got canceled?
This is the last season of The View.
Oh,
I didn't know
amen.
That.
It's been too long.
Because God
they
is real.
Canceled or they just
putting
it in
the I wouldn't say canceled. I wouldn't call The View canceled. I would say just not renewed.
Mm-hmm. That format has run its course this time.
The real, 8 seasons is...
It serves its purpose. It serves its purpose.
That's all.
The Real's been on for like 20 years.
No, The View, you mean?
The View.
Oh, The View. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. The Real has been on for 8 seasons, and it was really meant and designed as a sort of younger version of The View. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you look at after 8 years, right, like maybe they're not the younger version of The View anymore. Like, I think we tend, like,
right,
when you start at 32 and now you're 40 with, you know, basically like teenage kids, right? Like, you're like,
I mean, so they got Garcelle on there. Ain't Garcelle pushing 50?
Gotta be.
She's pushing 50. She's absolutely over 50.
And yeah, listen, she might be 52, 53. You know? Yeah. She's grown.
She's all great. Like my kids ain't even living with me. They out the house. Yeah. They own the house.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Now,
so
her twin boys are like 15.
No, but she has an older son.
She has an older son.
Oh, like a, shit. Mm-hmm. I know.
That means he's like 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That means the talk is up next.
So old that niggas don't even know you had a kid that age.
Exactly.
That's living his life.
He's capped out.
That means the talk is probably on deck next. I'm surprised the talk has survived this long, to be honest. But that format
has different rules, I think.
And probably because of the cost. I think the cost versus, you know, what they bring in. Because they don't have those big ticket folks on the talk anymore.
Yeah, true. I just wanted to mention Judge Ketanji Brown was confirmed. Last week, I guess. Last Wednesday or Thursday, so she was confirmed. So she will be sitting on the Supreme Court bench, hearing cases.
First time in Supreme Court history that the majority of the Supreme Court is not white and male.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a couple of other Supreme Court justices that are, you know, pretty old, and your boy Clarence ain't the healthiest. So,
you know, he's back outside.
He's back outside, but he ain't going.
I think Clarence was just laying low during the confirmation hearings.
I think you might be right. It could have been.
He was laying low from them emails.
Yeah.
But both simultaneously, because the heat would have been harder.
Uh-huh. His wife is definitely a scammer and a schemer, so it wouldn't surprise me if they put that
together.
He is too, nigga. Yeah. He a piece of shit. I don't fuck with him.
And honestly, this is how we know that at this point, these motherfuckers, meaning the people in leadership of our nation, are basically holding the idea of a constitution as a fucking social construct. Because how you do not demand that somebody who sits on the highest court in the land, who is supposed to be one of the, you know, handful of people in this country who are above all reproach, retire from the fucking bench because his wife was a co-conspirator
in
sedition. Like, they call it an insurrection. Let's be real, it was sedition. And, like, actually actively trying to figure out how to overturn the election results, and you were able to rule on that shit. A, how did you not recuse yourself? And B, like, how do you still sit the bench, my nigga? Like, what?
I thought a lot about Anita Hill this week, and like what she's doing and what she thinks about this whole everything. She crossed my mind this week. I hope she's doing well. I know she lives in Oklahoma.
I know
she's a professor still.
Yeah, University of Oklahoma. Yeah.
I know Thurgood just been steadily rolling over in his grave. He up there talking shit.
Constantly.
Everybody like, this motherfucker here.
So I want to mention also the Grammys were last week. I would love to see the ratings because I'm sure they weren't good. They've been steadily declining every year. And this episode had very low energy. Was boring. I mean,
really, I heard this one was
It was a steady decline.
I was on the yard.
Left that tennis court.
I was on the yard at Talladega College, being adulta, so I did not watch.
Yeah, it was okay.
It didn't hit an all-time low, but it was close.
It had to be because the energy was low.
Last year's was the least watched ever, and it was up from last year, but not much,
right? Yeah, and then also them being in Vegas didn't help. I think that threw the energy up as well, and a lot of
also it being in April. Like, I mean,
yeah, that too. The
awards
timing
shifting. There's an awards. You know, there are seasons to this shit, right? Mm-hmm. And when you are consistently used to watching things in a certain pattern at a certain time of year in a certain order. When they move that shit around, it's just not the same. Like, you know, it's supposed to be, for those of us who pay attention to all of these things, it's supposed to be that whole front of year run. You got Super Bowl, you got Oscars, you got Grammys, you got All-Star Weekend, like all of that shit goes together. And it's all being spread out is just weird.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. So yeah, then the Oscars, obviously, with all the stuff that happened there, it was kind of like
definitely stole some thunder
as well. So yeah, it was a good. I mean, Peace to Sonic. They were 4 for 4 in their categories.
Apparently, Bruno has never lost a category he's been nominated in.
Yeah, Bruno's a monster at the Grammys. He's a beast.
Shout out to Billie Eilish for that incredible performance.
Billie was dope. I like Olivia Rodrigo too. Like these are talented girls. Like they're really talented. They're legit talented girls. So I like that. I'm blanking out on who else even performed at this point.
Lil Nas X had a giant very upset about.
Him and Jack Harlow.
Yeah, I thought it was a great performance. I like that.
No, it was. I mean, the one thing about Lil Nas X, he's going to give you a great show.
They did Industry Baby?
He did a medley.
Did a medley. Okay. Jack came out. Yeah. But Lil Nas X is going to give you a show. Whether you are comfortable with the show or not, that's on you. But he's going to give you a show. You do it what you will. But he's never going to come out there and just walk back and forth. He's always got mad production and all that shit, and he's, you know, he's good. So, but anyway, so yeah, the Grammys was kind of semi this year. It wasn't, I don't know. I don't think it said it's lost its steam. I don't think BTS performed too. They did Butter.
That was great.
Yeah, they were dope too. But I just don't know if kids really care as much. It's not a point. It doesn't feel like it's appointment viewing as it used to be.
But I think that's the problem. I think the problem is trying to gain the youth market. The Grammys,
instead of going to the people who watch it.
But the Grammys was never until like relatively recently a youth market watch, right? That's only because of social screens. Like I wasn't watching the Grammys as a fucking kid. Are you kidding me? I don't even know if I was watching it in high school unless there was just nothing else on TV because we didn't have as many options.
Or like Michael was performing or something big like that.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah. So it's like I remember moments not because I watched them live, but because I've seen them replayed. So, like, I'm sure I did not see Thriller win live. Like, I'm positive I did not watch that. But I've seen that moment so many times over the years, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, but that's part of the problem with any kind of programming right now is that what you're really fighting for is to be in the conversation, viewership, but also, like, to get people who aren't watching to want to watch because they want to be part of the chatter and the second screen and all that shit. And it's tough. And the Grammys, especially, is really hard. This year was also, you know, the first year under the leadership of, under Black leadership for the Academy. With Harvey Mason and Felicia Butterfield. Mm-hmm. And, you know, them trying to bring some transparency into the process hasn't existed there before because, you know, at least three of us in Inc. I think you know by now on this call knows that even people in the music industry don't always know
how the process works.
Grammy voting works, right?
Yeah.
So they've changed some things, especially for the general four category voting. Mm. You know, they've been trying. They had an inclusion writer to make sure there were as many people, you know, many Black people, people of color, marginalized people represented. You know, amongst the crew, production, everywhere, craft services throughout the production. So, like, this was a big year for the Academy, all the way around in terms of the entire operations of the weekend. But I think that it's hard to judge when it's in April, when it's in Vegas, when like all these different Will Smith is still in the news cycle so heavy. Yeah. Like, there's a lot. There was a lot of X factors. Yes. You know, so, I heard because people who were there
said it was good.
Enjoy the weekend, at least. Okay. I don't know.
I wanted to mention Rothaniel. So Rothaniel is a comedy special by Gerard Carmichael, and I guess the hook of the special is the fact that Gerard comes out as gay. But To me, I told somebody the other day, and maybe I'm being hyperbolic, but to me, it has vaunted itself to me into a top five comedy special ever, because of the art of it and how he does it, and calling it. And he is a comedian, and there are parts where he's funny, but it's not like comedy like Eddie Murphy Raw, where it's just like brah, like nonstop, just slaying you and knock you down. You can't breathe. It's not that. It's very obviously introspective and very kind of therapeutic and very just interesting, because what he does is he tackles his growing up. He grew up in North Carolina into a, I guess for lack of a better term, a chaotic family, because he has two parents. His father has 23 outside children. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
His grandfather, excuse me, his grandfather had 23 outside children.
Okay, that's a little more normal.
And his father is one of the outsides. And his other grandfather had five. So there's all these outside kids and this stuff moving around and him trying to kind of get his bearing. And then he talks about where Willie goes. Very interesting is he talks about when he came out, how they treated him, mm-hmm. how it kind of shifted. And how his father was kind of like equating having outside children and all this fuckery with him being gay, like an equal, like, well, you fucked up, I fucked up, it's all, you know, it doesn't matter. And he's like, and how his brother treated him and how his mom, and he really like went deep on how his mom treated him. Mm-hmm. So his thing is basically like, why just because I came out as gay, are you treating me different? I'm still Will mm-hmm. Daniel. Like, I'm still Will Gerard. That was the hook of the thing. He was like, I hate my first name because they took my grandfather's names and pushed them together. But he doesn't mm-hmm. reveal his first name until literally the last line of the thing. Right. It was also, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling. I'm going to let y'all talk too. What also was incredible was that taped it at the Blue Note in New York. So it's a very intimate mm-hmm. thing. What I could see, it was all black. The audience. It might have been a few white folks, but it was definitely a black audience. And what was interesting is like he encouraged the audience to talk to him. So while he's right. talking, like I people were talking, but it's not heckling. They were literally like one woman sounds. She was almost like a therapist. Like she was talking about the guilt and all that. Like it was like real questions right. that they were interacting with. But I'm gonna let y'all talk because I don't want to take over the whole thing. But I just thought it was just fucking brilliant.
I'm just going to say one thing about it because I haven't seen it yet. What I did watch was his cold open for SNL after he dropped it.
Yeah.
And you could tell that there had been a turn in his career just in these short
His career.
Days
he's on fire already, right?
Yeah. He's about
to get whatever he wants.
His whole everything, like all of a sudden, I think it's actually Sean who's been the biggest Carmichael advocate.
Yeah, because bro watched the show.
Carmichael show's incredible. I still watch it a couple times a year.
But like my man had all the swag and even joked himself, like, I think I'm the least famous person to ever host Saturday Night Live. But it was clear that like there's a moment. Oh, and I was so happy for it because it got people to shut the fuck up about Will and Jada for a second. But I just wanted to acknowledge that. Like I haven't watched the special yet because I wanted to make sure. I mean the special yet because I wanted to make sure I had time to really concentrate on it. But I did watch his SNL cold open and I was like, oh, a flip switch. This was a turning point.
And just before y'all go, Sean and Inka, to your point, Nye, what you should also watch is his Seth Meyers. It's on YouTube. His Seth Meyers interview. He did like last week.
Yeah, I heard Seth Meyers
he talked to him for like 15 minutes straight. No commercials. He just like kept talking and asking questions. And like, you know, some of it was funny. And like, Gerard is definitely like, you just got to watch it because he's definitely, it's almost like he's still feeling all this shit. Like, he's still processing everything. So he wasn't like mad funny. He was just kind of like introspective. But I'm sorry, y'all, Inka and Sean, y'all go and talk about it.
I was going to say, it just seemed really refreshing that it was this cathartic stream of consciousness, like almost just, I got to get this shit out. And mm-hmm. it might be a little funny, but we got to really look into almost his personality. And I love the audience part too, because there was a part where a guy says, do you think your mother just needs more time? And he's like, you know, really thought about it. The way he used silence in this special was brilliant. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because you don't know what he's going to say next and you're in it. You don't look away. And he's like, you know, that's my mom. Like, why would she need more time? Like he's, mm-hmm. he's trying to kind of reconcile that. And through it all, like the thread of these people love me. So what else am I going to do is the underlying kind of heaviness that I got from it. But it just, it felt good to watch. It felt good to see him kind of come into his own as a mm-hmm. comedian and still, like, I loved it. I really did.
Yeah, I thought it was incredible. What'd you think, bro?
Yeah, I thought it was great, man. I followed Carmichael a little bit. Obviously, he has another special. I believe that's also on HBO Max.
Okay.
In 2017, which was good. He's not a slap your knee funny guy.
No.
Like, that's just not his style prior to this. What I do love is that not just that it was intimate, I thought that everything about it, from lighting, from how the camera angles were, how
the direction was fly.
It was great. Really, really well done. And he definitely looks like he's free. Mm. And even in Absolutely. The way that he's dressing, like, there's a clear release of what he thought he had to do. Absolutely. And I thought it was really, really, telling that he admitted about, he kind of came out, but also, like, he sort of admitted things that weren't necessarily necessary in this, but they were pertinent to the show. Like, when he talked about having a white boyfriend and I'm just saying, that was a moment in when somebody is being actually truthful and not being truthful only to suit a purpose is my point. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was really, really good. I thought it was really well done. I think he kind of does that. A part of his comedy act is a little bit of engagement. Mm. And that's a very dangerous thing because you have to be incredibly witty and incredibly quick in order to do that. Like, there are very few people that can do that, that sort of comedy that, a guy who I hate is actually very good at this, DL. DL is very
amazing
good
at that. Yeah.
It's like being really quick with responses and shit like that. But again, I definitely feel like it definitely put itself high on the list because mm-hmm. I look at that comedy special as a piece of art and not mm-hmm. a comedy special, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed it. I'm really happy for him. I don't know that his career is going to take off necessarily, but I do think that he will have, I would say, another shot. And what I mean by that is usually you get a shot, right? And the Carmichael show did not fare well. It was canceled. Lil Rel's show,
which is criminal because that show was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was a great show. And the Lil Rel show was canceled, I think, after one season. The couple of things that he has had his handprint on hasn't necessarily done well. Normally, you don't really get a big look after that. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But I think he's going to be fine. I mean, Gerard, he's a great, I can tell he's probably an incredible writer. I'm sure he comes up with incredible ideas. And he's the kind of guy, and I hate to say this because I don't think that this is what he's trying to do. He's the kind of guy that white folks love, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's never going to really allow you to say crazy shit around him. But he's also not he's not unpredictably black, right? Like, he's not gonna come in the office with the fucking hammer and like, you know what I'm saying, pull the pistol out on you because you said some dumb shit, right?
Seems like a guy that'll let you get your whole point out and kind of
before he eviscerates you.
The reason that he's in the Kanye documentary that we just watched, he was out on the ranch in Wyoming listening to that nigga, which I think takes a special kind of person. But anyway,
it was just really great. Like, and, you know, really, like, I love the one of the, I can't call them jokes because they're not jokes. But one of the parts that I liked was what you referenced, bro, was when he was talking about black woman was like his friends and whatnot, and his aunts and shit was so supportive of him coming out as gay. He was like, yeah, they supportive, you know, black woman supportive, but they racist as a motherfucker. And then when I told him I had a white boyfriend, you know, they, and then the whole audience is like, and he's like, see, Chip. And then one black lady's like, lays in the cut. And then she goes, wow. And he's like, you know, like, it was just, and I even love how they did it, how they show him like walking out of his crib, yeah. And, like walking yeah. to the spot, like by himself in a snowstorm. And then he just walks in. Gives his coat to the coat lady, gives her a hug, just hits the stage, and at the end, yeah. he just walks out like he's just walking home. It was just like Russell, the direction. It's literally a piece of art. It literally is a piece of art, and it's extremely well done. I highly recommend it for anybody who hasn't watched it yet to watch it. We could jump into what you're watching. What you're watching?
Okay, The Ultimatum, nigga.
Is this Netflix?
Yes. It's the same producers as Love is Blind. It is the most chaotic show I have ever watched in the history of my life. Like,
so the premise comes from Nick and Jess and Vanessa Lachey's real life relationship story.
Right.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
They took a break and dated other people. And then there was like an ultimatum and they came back together. Right.
But so I'm thinking, because they showed the previews of it after the reunion of Love is Blind, and I was already like, oh, this is gonna be a mess. But I was thinking it was gonna be like couples in their late 20s, early 30s who've been together for years on some, like, you know, shit to get off the pot shit. All these people, the majority except for like two people, are all under 25. Like, most of them mm-hmm. are like 23 and 24. There's like one 30-year-old man. And the people who are giving the ultimatums, because it's a couple of women, it's a couple of men who have given their partner these ultimatums. For the women, it's really just like, one of them is really like, why we graduated from school, that's what comes next. And, you know, another one is just, it feels like she just wants to be like an Instagram mom, because she has this idea of what she wants her family to look like. And she wants this thing, and she wants this car, and she wants this whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And with the guys, it's just like, well, I want kids, and I want, you know, da da da, but none of it is about the partner. It's just about these,
like, what they see, kind of like what they see on social media. So that's what
exactly
they're supposed to have.
But the other thing is that the way the switch works is that, you know, both the people who gave the ultimatum and their partners, you know, are with other people for, they live with other people for 3 weeks, and then they live with their partner again for 3 weeks. But they're all switching amongst the same pool of people. I thought they were bringing in outside people. Mm-hmm. And production keeps them all, like, they socialize together. Mm-hmm. They're doing like happy hours together. So even after they pick other partners, they live in
they
the
still
same
see each other.
So
even they live in the same apartment building.
After they pick, they live in the same apartment building, but after they pick partners, like, all the guys go out together, all the girls go out together. So the girls are telling each other, like, yeah, he was. So imagine, like, you sitting across, like, I'm sitting across from some chick who's dating my man. And she's like, yeah, you know, we were cuddling, and, you know, I felt him get hard, and he's like, got a nice size. Bitch, I will flip this fucking table. No, seriously. And, like, legit. No, but we were making out. We did this, and, you know, one girl's like, well, yeah, I can see that, because, you know, we definitely always, like, it's just, it's all, like, it's so messy. I'm like, this shit is so, okay, active jealousy has to be a fact, a component that they are intentionally putting in here, because you can't really expect somebody to move on in their mind if they have to hear from somebody else about
what they're doing.
And the guys
doing this with each other,
yeah,
too?
The guys yeah. do it too. And the guys,
well, they also go out, like, off camera too, and, like, hang yeah. out with each other.
The guys
and, like,
don't share as much information as the girls. The girls are being much more petty about the shit. And we actually end up with some stuff where, like, a couple of people are so panicked because they're not getting picked, they're not getting who they want, that they, you know, fuck around. One gives into the old, like, when they're selecting the people they're going to pair off with, Mm-hmm. One actually gives in to his partner's ultimatum and proposes on the spot, which prompts another one who both women that he thought he might have wanted chose somebody else to.
That's so cringy.
He gave the ultimatum to again propose to his partner and act like he didn't care about the differences between them. And that shit was exact. Like, no, literally every episode, I was like, what is going on?
I was just like, please don't get married. Please don't get married.
None of these people need to get married to anybody.
Like, the finale, I think they're releasing in a couple of days. But like, everybody should just go back to your corners.
Nobody needs to get married.
It's really bad.
Nobody needs to get married. Everybody needs to grow the fuck up. Like, mm-hmm. it's a combination of being a complete disaster. Because my very first thing was, these people are so fucking young. But you cannot look away. Like, I'm not going to say it's good. Like, I think Love is Blind is good. It's not good. It's a train wreck.
It's a mess. It's a mess.
It's really bad.
Yeah, it's good in reality TV terms because it is a fucking, it is a intentional disaster. It is a well-orchestrated fucking mess.
It's so bad.
Like, it's so bad.
It's a mess. Like, they need each other's families. Clearly the family thinks the other partner is shit in some of the cases.
The family's a bias. Like, it's the friends. It's a y'all gotta watch this. All right, shit.
I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna check it out. I'm gonna tap in.
People claiming they fell in love with somebody else in the 3 weeks and don't want to leave and go back to their partners.
Oh my God.
I've never seen
they're considering cheating versus not. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Watching. Yeah, y'all.
None of these people can run for office after.
Like, literally, really nobody bad. Needs to be married. But yeah. It's so. It's kind of like Tiger King. It's such a train wreck that it's going
to look away. I can't look away. Yeah,
it's going to do wonderfully. Like, because people are already like, oh my God! Like, because you have to watch it. You're compelled to watch it. You can't believe how ridiculous these people are. It's insane.
It's really bad.
Yeah, it's bad. Right.
Bro, I know you got to.
Sean should go next.
Yeah, because I know you got to jump too. So what you watching, bro?
Shit. What was I mean, really?
Were you watching anything?
Talk about Ptolemy.
Ptolemy Gray. So that's okay. So Ptolemy Gray had its season finale this week. Mm-hmm. It's a 6-episode series. It was on Apple TV. Mm-hmm. It was starring Samuel L. Jackson and Dominique, I forget the young woman's last name.
Dominique Fishback.
It was incredible. It was written by Walter Mosley. It was incredible. And the reason I say it's incredible is because I want to say this. There is a very specific way that Black people who were raised around and through our, like, they've been raised in our culture, that there are nuances that no one other than us can pick up. I don't give a fuck that the Brits can do the accent. I get that. They're not going to pick up the nuances. They're not going to say aura because that's how old Black people say aura, right?
Yeah.
Like, they will not pick up those slight things. And it was Samuel L. Jackson was one of the most amazing performances
Stellar.
I've ever seen because he shifts. I don't want to give too much of it away. But he shifts in having dementia and not. And like watching him go in and out of those characters, it's the same person, but he's going in and out of those characters. It is the most phenomenal shit I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it was a great supporting cast, phenomenal supporting cast, well directed, just incredible piece of work, man. And I'm not a big Emmy guy, but I just don't see how he doesn't get whatever Emmy is available for him.
Wow. Okay. I need to watch this.
You'd love it. You'd absolutely love it.
Old right. Black man shit. Old, and
right.
Like,
okay.
All yeah.
Right. I'm going to tap in.
It's incredible.
And what about you? What about you, Inka? What you watched?
I watched so much TV this week. It's a little embarrassing. I definitely watched Winning Time. I'm caught
okay.
up on that.
You watch a new one from last night?
I did. I'm fascinated with that because I've only ever known the NBA as like this powerhouse. Like, you know, everybody I know is watching it. I didn't know the NBA was like the fourth most popular sport in America in the 70s and 80s. Like, everybody hated basketball and thought it was stupid.
They wouldn't even show the finals in real time. They would tape them.
I know. That's crazy.
Oh, so real quick. Let me tell you before I forget about in a minute time. So Winning Time, bro. they showed Magic. He was looking for his sneaker deal.
Yes.
And he met Phil Knight. And Phil Knight just kind of walked up on him and was like, yo, I got the sneaker. He pulled out the sneaker with his name on the back. And he was like, yo, it'll be the Magic, da da da. And he said, I'll give you, was it ATC? I'll give you, was it a dollar
18% of the stock and a dollar per sale
of the shoe and 18% of the stock, which $100,000, which was 18% of the stock of Nike at that time. Which, Magic didn't do the deal, and they showed the calculation that right now will be worth $5.2 billion.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you can see Magic got talked out of it.
Mm-hmm, he was gonna go with Phil Knight.
He like fucked with him, but these other people, the Converse people, talked him out of it and gave him nothing like they gave, like Phil Knight was offering. But anyway.
Also wild to me that Pat Riley got credited with discovering or coming up with the Showtime style of basketball.
Mm.
And it wasn't his, it was McKinney's.
Yeah, Jack McKinney.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So I'm fascinated. I'm like, the 80s look very lit. The Forum looked like a place I would want to be if wild I was that cocaine. Age at that time. Showing the doctor offering crack cocaine to people, worst, all casual, worst, like at the table, worst. Was fucking wild.
Yo.
But yeah, I watched Ultimatum. I think I'm the only person that's still watching SNL. But shout out to SNL. I think it's been brilliant this season.
I will actually watch it.
I will
it,
say I saw a joke from the news this week about the slap. That's the only funny joke I've heard about it yet.
Mm.
Where he was talking about Will getting
Jones.
They're basically saying that Will's punishment is be banned for the Oscars for 2 years, and he was like, "Isn't that punishment? Like,
he
just doesn't have to go sit through the four-hour
bullshit,
joint." Yeah,
yeah. I've been watching Saturday Night Live. Like, I usually watch it like on Hulu or YouTube, like a speed through it. But it has been pretty good this season. Actually.
It's been good. And shout out to Willow, who performed on SNL this weekend alongside Bella Cabello as like a surprise, but did incredibly. Like, there's something to be said for just letting your kids be weirdos.
Listen, that girl
is walking in her lane. And she
does whatever the fuck. That is one of the most self-possessed young women I've ever seen.
Absolutely. Self-actualization in the flesh. Like, she is doing exactly what she wants to do.
She is her.
Great.
Yeah. She is her. I watched this documentary on Netflix called about this guy named Jimmy Savile. I can't remember the name of the doc. But Jimmy Savile was this guy in England in the early 60s up until like he died. He was living like, I never heard of him, but he was one of the most popular people in England. He got knighted. Like, he was crazy. He had a show called Jimmy Will Fix It, which basically like was, there's been shows like this here where like some kid will write in and be like, my teacher is really nice, but she's some sad sometimes, and I would love to take her to dinner. And so the show would like organize with Jimmy, the kid, to take his, to some like fancy ass restaurant and whatnot. But he was like moving around with Prince Charles and Prince Philip and like the Queen, and they were like calling him, asking him for advice, and all. Margaret Thatcher was one of his best friends. Like, he was massive. But you'd come under, unveil that on the low, he was a fucking pedophile. Yeah, he's a pedophile for his whole life.
That's on my list to watch.
Yeah, so he always would talk about these girlfriends that he had. But like, no, everybody was like, we never seen a girlfriend, bro. You keep saying it, but like, where they at? And so like later on, it comes out that what he would do is he got, like a lot of pedophilia people do, he got, with all this money, he got involved in charities with the hospitals. Would like go to kids' hospitals or kids' orphanages and shit, and take the girls out. And it's a wild ass documentary, bro. You got it. So it's upsetting. And it's not long.
What's it on?
Netflix.
I was also speaking of, I forgot. So I finished The Dropout, the joint that's about Elizabeth Holmes. And I started We Broke It, which is the WeWork doc, which I don't know if this shit is supposed to be hot comedy. You know, it's Jared Leto, who is such a weirdo.
Oh, Jared
Leto and Anne Hathaway. This shit is so fucking funny to me, and I know that But the thing that's so funny is that I think they're playing for comedy, but I also think that they're probably not far off from exactly who these people are.
Well, yeah, probably where they really were, exactly.
Right. So, but now there's also one for Uber. So I'm like...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, it feels early to me to have all of these docs about this, but maybe...
Yeah, but companies are still existing. There's one coming on too on Netflix. I think it comes on this week about Abercrombie and Fitch. And how they was mad racist. It's a documentary about how they was mad racist. Yeah. I saw the trailer. It looked very interesting. And one other thing I watched was about this guy named Diomedes on the Netflix again, another documentary. He was a Colombian singer. And he was huge, basically the biggest Colombian singer maybe ever. Like, he was massive. But it talked about how he was crazy addicted to cocaine. He was running around with Pablo Escobar and them. This nigga had 70 kids. 70.
Wow.
But he was just blazing everything moving.
Right.
And like his arc, and he went to jail. And one of the women he was fucking with, he killed her. Like, it's a wild ass documentary. He was
at the end of the internet.
Yeah, I'm definitely close to the edge.
The other thing I want to mention was Jesus and Mero came back for season 4, and the interviews they are getting are unbelievable.
Did you see the Denzel one?
I saw the Denzel one.
Wow. Yes, yeah, I saw Sam too. Week.
Yeah. They had Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg at the same time, which I loved. And then Pusha T, which was a great interview.
Okay.
And this week, Michelle Yeoh, who is in that movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once, I think it's called. It looks like
the Denzel interview. So. The Denzel, that was definitely the best Denzel interview I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Because he was just
so funny. Like,
and they're funny. So cool and he was just like the nigga Denzel. Cause they talking about Bronx shit, you know. I'm like, yo.
Oh yeah. I love to see Denzel in his full like niggadom come out.
He's such
an old black man.
I was thinking about this. I'm not sure if I said this last week or if I said this to somebody on phone, but like, I was watching Denzel and I realized that, you know, for years Denzel would slip all the way into the uncleness and pull back a little bit. Like, he would slip all the way into it for a role and pull back. But I was watching him at the Oscars, like, the nigga's postures changed. Like,
if you shirt was
down, you sit down like
that. His shirt wasn't tucked in.
All the way down the chair.
Yeah.
Like, he got the gut. The gut's not leaving. This nigga
done full death to the black people in the
building. The suits are probably off the rack. None of them shit is tailored.
Ain't no Taylor like, Tom Ford.
He don't give, like, them pants ain't him. Like, this nigga don't give a fuck.
Yeah, because he's like, y'all niggas know who I am.
He holds his mouth different. Everything. Denzel is an uncle out. He's like, he about to be grandpa out here for real.
Exactly.
Definitely pop out here. I love it.
Yeah. If you haven't watched the Diesel Samara Denzel interview, you should watch it, because like I said, it's the best Denzel interview I've ever seen.
I love him and Sam being the elders now.
Yeah.
I'm appreciating watching this evolution
and owning it.
And the amount of black work they're doing now, like, there's something absolutely to be said for even Sam Jackson owning, like, he bought that book from Walter Mosley,
right?
Oh, that teleplay.
Yes.
Okay,
so he owns that's on Apple TV Plus, which is like, we never would have saw that if someone like Sam hadn't
never
done it, and it's a brilliant piece of work. Like, please check it out.
I wanted to mention this thing that I've been seeing on social media now for a few years. And it's just, and maybe as ladies, you guys can give me some insight. It's very interesting how the younger women, definitely more the younger women, go on vacation, right? And that's beautiful. But they never reveal who they're with. And it's always so interesting to me, like, and as a dude, and maybe I'm a cocky piece of shit, but as a dude, if I'm taking you on vacation, I'm gonna feel like you're not gonna hide me. I'm not saying you're gonna be hugged up in every picture, but there's
two things happening.
Maybe it's trick offery.
No, there's two things happening. Sometimes they actually are alone.
No, sometimes they are. Sometimes they are with girlfriends,
right?
Yes, so,
and there is a bit of mystique, right? Like, you're with your girls, but you taking all your pictures solo. If that's your brand,
to make it feel like
mystique, like, who's taking these pictures? Who's she with? What's she doing? So part of it is intentional mystique. Part of it is they are really alone and they don't want nobody else in the shot. Part of it is like, that might be somebody else's nigga.
Yeah. I mean,
the other part is, it's none of your business.
I get what Jeff is saying, but what I'm suggesting is that these niggas don't want to be in the pictures either. That's what I'm saying.
My thought is like, even in say 15 years ago, if I'm this age and I'm going on a vacation, the 4x6 photos that are going to make it into my photo album are not going to be of the nigga that I was with at the time.
Well, now if I was in my 20s, when I was in my 20s, I was only going on vacation with niggas I could tolerate. I have a very low, I never really did the sugar daddy shit, because if I don't like you, I don't like you. I can't spend time around you if I don't actually like you. So if I was going on vacation with you, like there was something, right? But I've definitely been in places like an outing, a show, a concert, something.
You didn't want nobody to know you was with.
You ain't make it in the frame, my nigga, for various reasons, right? Like, it's nobody's business. I don't need anybody assuming. You ain't supposed to be there. I ain't supposed to be, like, you know, there's various, but my friend went on vacation recently with her husband. Like the whole house had COVID, gotten over it. She was stressed out. Her husband took her away from Puerto Rico for a weekend. And I was joking with her because all her pictures, she looked like she there by herself. Like, it's just her wine glass. She's married, but she was like, he hates being in social media. Okay. I was like, you out here looking like a 20-year-old on a vacation by yourself, like intentionally leaving him out the shot. It was so funny to me. And she was like, I wasn't even aware of it. He just, like, there's one picture where it's like his arm is in a reflection in the mirror. But she was like, he hates social media. So I wasn't even thinking like that. I was like,
I just find it very interesting. It's, I guess, you know, it's cultures change and shift and move. And that's kind of what it is. But it's just very interesting. Like, you very rarely see younger women. Mm-hmm. You very rarely see them show who they're with.
But the
35 is enough. It's a little different. But like,
but if your brand isn't a couple brand, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I think they get that the internet is forever now.
Yeah.
Whereas like, we were posting stuff on the internet 10 years ago, we didn't give a fuck. So like,
we didn't give a fuck.
Whoever I was on vacation with was probably in the pictures because I had 65 Instagram followers.
Right.
But oh, yeah, I see that.
Nowadays, like, they live
57
online.
Million.
You don't want to have the archive and shit. But also, like, if you are somebody who does all the posts, because I mean, they be out with their girls and everybody taking
a lot of times,
shots, doing all the solo shots. Because it's like, now you have a brand. Your brand is your solo brand. People need to see your fit head to toe. People need to see just you and the caption or whatever. Now, if your brand is a couple brand, then you put that nigga in the photo. Mm. But with these Instagram influencers, with the people who really do this, like Cheyenne's last two boyfriends, neither one of them niggas made it to the gram. So they was about to break up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it took that long.
And this was like, also an issue on Ultimatum, by the way, which is why people need to be posting.
Look at that. See, I haven't watched that show, but I'm tapped in. You know what I'm saying?
But not even on some vacation shit, just on some like
just regular couple, shit.
And I'm not present on your on your social
media. Because different circumstances, but to the male ego, if I'm with somebody, you know, Cheryl, and like we're really a couple, right? And she's constantly posting solo. That tells the world that she's available. Now, that doesn't mean that she's going to do anything with that.
But then
that tells the world these DMs is open. They can get busy.
But also, like, what I find interesting about this, and I'm not saying you, Jeffrey, is that to me it feels like a double standard, right? Because dudes are also the first ones who are like, why are you so anxious to post me? Why are you in such a hurry to post me? Why you want me to post you? Me and Greg low-key had this issue. I was not on Greg's page anywhere the entire fucking 4 years we were together. And Greg's excuse was, I don't have as many followers as you. I don't post that much. And I'm like, yeah, but the followers you do have, like, actually know you. Like, they fuck with you. Not a birthday post. Now, he didn't, like, bug out. If you went to his tag joints, it was all me. Because Greg was all over my page, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, but it wasn't enough that I felt like arguing about it because I didn't even want to get that deep into it. But it was always something I was aware of, is like, had I been somewhere and not posted him and he was with me, it would have been a problem. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
I'm not on his page.
So it's like, I find it to be a little bit of a double standard. And I think also, like, you got to consider, like, my IG page is still, for me personally, like, I'm not out here trying to make IG, like, I'm not trying to heavily curate
money and all that shit.
I'm not trying to post the fit. I'm not going to take 80,000 pictures until I get the right one. My IG is not a heavy lift. Mm-hmm. But for those people for whom it is, I don't want to have to archive all my shit from this tropical locale in 6 months when we break up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get it. Yeah.
It was very interesting. Everybody's secret. Because the girl, this would trick, well, I've thought this for a long time, but then kind of what triggered this was forgive me, young lady, because I forget her name. She posted on Twitter this thing like, we want, well, I'm paraphrasing, but she basically was like, we all want love, but everybody's mysterious with each other. Nobody wants to make the first move. Like, who should call who first? I don't want to post you on my Instagram. I don't want to act like I really like you. It's like, we all want love, but nobody wants to kind of make the move to actually do the things that you need to do to build into a couple. If it's like that, it's like you're fighting against
yourself.
Nobody
wants to be vulnerable.
Nobody. Yeah. She wrote that. Nobody wants to be vulnerable. She literally, that was really one of the lines she wrote. It was like a three tweet thread that she wrote, and that was definitely one of the lines. So it's like, so again, everybody's generation has got its shit with them. You know, we all, like, it's not like, you know, oh, my generation was great. Nah, we've done some bullshit too. But as social media has taken over the world.
Yeah.
And these, like you said, all these pressures from social media, which we didn't have in our youth, it's just shifting the culture and the mating culture is shifting so much.
It's very different. And you know what, Jeff? There's also a fear of like, once I post this man, I'm opening us up to scrutiny.
Criticism. Right? Mm-hmm.
You're opening it up to the chicks being like, I was with that nigga, blah, 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 blah. You're opening up to, you know, one of the rare instances when somebody finds out niggas married. Like, but if nothing else, you're opening yourself up to people being in your business. Like, for real, for real. And I've never been the whole, like, I don't believe you have to share everything about your partnership, but I've never been, like, super secret, like, oh, I'm not telling anybody who I'm with person. But I do very much understand differently in a social media age, the way people really clock your shit to try to figure out, are y'all good? Are y'all not? Are y'all together? Are you not? Not just even celebrities, but just
normal people.
Like, ain't posted a man in a while. Are they good? And then you go to his page and you go to somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
People's like doing deep dives on your personal life. So yeah, no doubt.
Different level of bullshit too. So there's that. So you gotta be sure that you're sure that you're sure that you're sure.
Like I went to Broadwine another time, like about a month ago, and I met this dude in there. He just started talking to me. People just talking to me. It's so weird. So always in my life. Always
they
my life.
Really do just start talking.
They do. No, they do. I mean, I remember I was with my an ex long time ago, and I was like, you know, people just say hi to me all the time. She was like, get the fuck out of here. I said, watch. And we went somewhere and people were just like, hey, she's like, you know them? I was like, no, people do. It's weird. It's weird. With me. But anyway,
that's so rude of her to say, like, she didn't believe me. Like, damn, can I have a friendly face?
No, she's just like, nigga, whatever. But then she saw it in real life. She's like, oh, shit, you wasn't lying. So anyway, so this guy comes to me, starts talking to me. And he tells me he's, you know, recently divorced and he's been through some shit and he's getting back out there. And he's like, bro, how do you do it, man? Because, like, I met a girl, right? And I asked her for her phone number and she looked at me like I was crazy. And she said, send me your Instagram. And he was like, what? I just wanted to talk to you. He was like, no. So I had to give her my Instagram and then she followed me and then she would only talk to me through the DMs. Like, he was in his early 40s and again, just recently divorced, so he hadn't been out here. So again, I'm just talking about the culture shift. It's almost like if you meet a guy, girl, whatever the situation is, and you get to the point where you're actually talking to him on the phone, that's almost like you'll go together now.
Y'all definitely almost go together.
Like, because you got to either, you got to text or DM until you build to the point where we can actually hear each other's voices.
And I actually prefer that. The one thing I do like about, and not to get off on a whole tangent about, the one thing I do like about this culture is that I can do some fucking investigative, you know, sleuthing on your ass.
Yeah, you don't have to have a friend at the police department to know all they shit anymore.
Yeah, to glean some basic things about you from looking at your socials or lack thereof, which is also a red flag. Like, you ain't got, even if you 50, you ain't got no socials,
no Facebook, no nothing.
That's weird. So it's like that part I do appreciate, because I always have been we got a text for a little while because we talk, because I hate talking on the phone. But you're right. Nobody is just like, yo, what's your number anymore?
Nah.
They don't even ask. They just look you up on Instagram and hit
you. Yeah. I went out with a young lady a couple months ago. We didn't really know each other that well. And she got this. She said, you know, I Googled you. And I was like, really? Why? She was like, because I wanted to see if you was really who you say. I'm like, okay. I am who I am. Like, I'm not lying. You know what I'm saying? But like, It's just a different day and age. It's just different. It's just very different.
Yeah. Shout out to, we had a what's the next generation? Wow. A Gen Z-er over last night. Shout out to Kay Edwards. She was a very sweet girl, but we had this whole conversation about like dating and the whole thing. And all I had to say was just, God bless. I don't know.
It's hard out here.
I wouldn't make it out in these streets at this point.
Hard out here for a pimp.
Glad I'm out.
Yeah, we want to wrap it up with honesty. This nigga Eric Adams, and I got to say that because he got COVID and he's passing COVID around other people.
He doesn't believe that COVID is still a problem. He wants y'all to go back to work.
Your man got COVID at a super spreader event. I think it was a lawyer event or some type of awards ceremony.
And he didn't get it at Rogers joint.
Well, I mean, he probably did actually on the low, but they blame it on this other, possibly him getting COVID at this other event he went to, and they said it was a super spreader event. It was known as a super, everybody knew it was a super spreader event, and he then went, instead of, you know, quarantining and checking himself to make sure that he wasn't positive, he then went to the Real Abilities Film Fest, maskless. Now, the Real Abilities Film Fest is a film festival for people with disabilities.
Right, under the Tribeca Film Festival.
Yeah, exactly. And he went there maskless, knowing he had come from a super spreader, had been at a super spreader event. And so, and then after that event, he tested positive. So people are now nervous about, did he possibly spread it? Because he's the mayor, so he's taking pictures of people, blah, 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 blah. So he's close to people. So it's like, bro, you got
crazy reckless. And here's the thing. Getting COVID, because we do have another COVID surge happening right now. Getting COVID at this point, and I mean, listen, I just came from Georgia. And I'll be honest, I was in Georgia and Alabama moving around half and half. But I also got a second booster before I went.
Okay.
So at this point,
you're probably good, kinda, dude.
Yeah, at this point, I was honestly kind of the mind like, I will wear a mask where I have to. I'll wear masks where I'm in like a really concentrated, you know, hot crowd, I was not going to kill myself with it.
Yeah,
you know what
I'm
saying? Yeah. And that's a choice that I made. That's my line. But I was wearing it wherever it was mandated, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, getting COVID at this point itself is not something to be embarrassed by. But Eric Adams was moving recklessly, and
you're the mayor, and you shouldn't be moving recklessly.
Yeah, you can't be moving recklessly, and you know, you testing positive in the middle of you trying to tell everybody like you need your people back in the office or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, and meanwhile you got your
COVID reckless. his first hundred days have been abysmal. Like, they just,
well, you know, I saw a stat last week. They said the first 3 months, which is ended March 31st, crime is up 44% in the city. Now, obviously, that's not based on just him, but it looks terrible because he's a policeman and he came in with some police shit. Like, I'm a stop all the shit. And there's a, you know, and it's flying upward. 44% up. It's like, bro, it's bad out here, bro. And now the weather's breaking, which is not going to help.
Which means it's going to get worse.
Doing your worst, so you know,
this has the potential, with everything that's been going on with the crime rate rising,
Like, this has the potential to be an 89, like a 1989.
Yeah, it feels like that outside. Yeah. It does.
It has the potential to be that, which in New York is a devastating,
very dangerous
summer of racial tension and crime. Mm-hmm. Like, devastating, devastating. Yeah. So,
So we're going to wrap it up
on that. It's the summer of Do the Right Thing, which was written before the summer actually happened.
Mad hot, too.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap it up on that note. We're going to wrap up on that note. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Happy birthday, Nye.
Oh, yeah, happy birthday, Nye. We'll talk about Boogie Yoki next week. And
I'm sure I'll have some stories for y'all about Jeffrey and Sean's.
And Kelly.
Judging. And Kelly. And Kelly. Judging. And happy Resurrection Sunday to those who observe.
That's right.
We are in the Holy Week.
So Good Friday is Friday, correct?
Yes. That's, yes. Good Friday comes before Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Happy 420.
And also, for those who are in New York, HBCU grads, spring coming is back in New York this weekend.
Is that Saturday?
Saturday, yep.
Is that Riverbank?
Riverbank, yep.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna come through. I'm gonna come through.
So y'all rep your sets.
I'm wearing my Morgan hoodie.
Yep, and come and come down.
Get your booster.
Exactly.
And get your booster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.